Nice.
Independently wealthy.
Yeah.
As opposed to being independently full of bollocks.
Yeah. Yeah. One of those things will happen forever for me and the other never will. I'll let people decide which.
This is Bad Voltage, episode 72 for Thursday, the 28th of July, 2016.
Nice quick math there, Stuart.
Pretty yeah, well fly too.
Apart from the fact that I added 2 to 26 and got 26 again, so I'm not brilliant at this, but you know, give it time.
No. I'm just proud practice. Of you doing math. That was awesome.
It's okay. We're proud of you, Honeysuckle.
With me here on the show are Brian Lundy, Jeremy Garcia, and Jono Bacon. I'm Stuart Langridge. What's on the show this week?
We're going to be talking about this Pokemon Go phenomenon that seems to be sweeping through the world, and we're going to get into, you know, the game and what's been going on, as well as Nintendo and what's been going on there with their market cap. But we'll also be delving a little bit into some potentially subversive CIA-related stuff as well.
Yeah, we will. Then we're going to talk about music streaming services and why Jono uses Spotify, because he lives in 1997. That's when Spotify came out, right? 97? Probably.
Roughly.
Hey, it takes a while. It takes a while for me to find these things.
It takes a while.
I didn't see it on Usenet.
No, it wasn't on the Gopher, so I know Gopher, how it goes, man. It's hard.
Did you get an advert on Friends Reunited for it?
Shut up. Move along. Jeremy?
And now, Waze, Pikachu, and Bad Voltage.
So as far as I can tell, the whole world appears to have embraced the idea of playing some game called Pokemon Go, which I don't really understand. But being slightly more serious, I have actually played this thing myself, and I have spoken to people where I said, I don't understand it, and been greeted with incredulity that I've not played any previous Pokemon games. But the idea that you'll just see people in the street walking along, looking into their phone and possibly bumping into trees.
Yes.
All over the place.
Yes.
I'm kind of interested about why this is the big thing when everything previously hasn't been. What's different about it?
And it's not even just
given
just a
that
big
given
thing.
This is today's big thing. Is that just a flash in the pan, or is it the next Facebook or
it
something?
It seems to be so such a wide number of The demographics seem to be all over the place, right? It's not just kids or even people that grew up in the 90s with Pokemon. It's 70-year-olds, and it seems to have reached an everywhere. Yeah. You have people falling off a cliff and jumping onto subway tracks. The guy drove into a cop car while he's playing. People being robbed. People being stabbed. The people found dead bodies. I mean, the Holocaust Museum had to post something saying, please don't play Pokemon Go in the Holocaust Museum.
Yeah, that was pretty tight.
Oh my God.
Arlington National Cemetery, it was similar. Now you're seeing a bunch of things where people are actually playing in places where it should be obvious that it's highly inappropriate. But So, Johnny, you were about to answer the question Eck had, which was, do you think it's a flash in the pan or Facebook?
Well, I was going to say, like, for those people who have been living in a cave, we should probably spin people up with what's been going on. So this game, Pokemon Go, came out.
They're even playing it in caves, though, so those people have heard of it.
Right. Yeah. No, I really don't think we need to catch anyone up on what Pokemon Go
give
is.
Give them a little brief intro.
As of today, apparently it's had 75 million downloads worldwide. And it's developed by Nintendo and Niantic.
No, it's not. It's developed by Niantic.
It's just licensed the name.
It's been licensed by Nintendo and the Pokemon Company.
It's been licensed by Pokemon International and its subsidiaries, of which there are multiple. And Nintendo is a part owner of Pokemon International. And Niantic is the licensee, and they are the developer.
Yeah, right. Which we'll get to in a bit, right? So why is this so successful is the first question. I mean, my gut feeling here
because
is...
Because Pokemon's always successful.
Is that first of all? Well, this is
Pokemon's
definitely
huge. Pokemon's huge. The number of sales for Pokemon are off the charts. Always.
Yeah.
I agree that Pokemon is huge, but it feels like with this time around, due to the significant success of this game, that it's crossed beyond typical Pokemon fans into the wider consciousness of society. I mean, there are people I know who have who have never been interested in Pokemon. I mean, hell, I installed it on my phone. I don't care about Pokemon.
The CIA,
so I think it's definitely crossed over. But the question I have is, like, why do we think that's happening? Because Ingress, which is a similar game in some respects, has been successful, but not to this level.
When you say Ingress is a similar game in some respects, given that Pokemon Go is an Ingress skin, as far as I can tell.
No, the gameplay, the game mechanics and the whole point of it are so different.
It is different.
I think, for those of you unfamiliar with Ingress, because I was not familiar with Ingress until we did Bad Voltage Live in Fulda, where Taurus played it assiduously. It's a game also by Niantic that is somewhat similar to Pokemon Go, but the idea behind it is that you draw walls and capture areas, and it's a much different gameplay than throwing balls at Pokemon to catch them. But the Niantic was able to seed the world of Pokemon Go so quickly because they used the data from Ingress, which has been running for a couple of years now. And then they obviously had the data from being Keyhole and doing Google Earth and all that stuff. So that's how they were able to quickly seed it.
Certainly there's it's made its way out. I completely agree with Brian. If you do a thing with Pokemon in it, lots and lots of people will buy it because it's popular.
Yes.
Ingress had... didn't have that breakout into the mainstream thing, but it did have a wide user base. It did have location stuff relative to almost everything. I mean, I was away on holiday last week, and we were at some random cool-looking viaduct in the middle of nowhere in southern England, and it's a poke stop. Right?
Yes.
There's no way that you could go from zero to somewhere like that being relevant to the game you were playing unless someone had already made it an Ingress base or whatever 2 years previously. You've had this hugely crowdsourced data set. So is the idea that you take a good popular game, combine it with a good popular brand, and that gives you a whole bunch of crossover appeal? Is this why people release things like, Star Wars Monopoly?
Well, yeah, I mean that's exactly what it is.
Plus,
people have been clamoring for Nintendo franchises on mobile platforms for a decade or more now. And I think now that we finally have one of the major Nintendo franchises, all the people who are familiar with Nintendo as a brand, as a franchise, jump on it immediately. And then once they jump on it and they brag about it to their friends and they talk about it a lot, then it has this kind of a cascading snowball effect. And it gets an additional 50% of people on top of that jump on it, and then all of a sudden you have 50 million people all over the place playing it.
Question for you, possibly for Brian, I think you probably know the most about this. Pokemon is a Nintendo brand in the sense they're a part owner of the Pokemon company.
That
we saw the stock market go, wow, Nintendo finally get mobile, and then a week later go, wow, actually they have nothing to do with this whatsoever, stock price drops again.
That was pretty funny, wasn't it?
I don't think that's why the stock price dropped, though. I think it's wrong. I'll let you finish your question, but I don't think that's the right... I think that initially the smart money always knew that they only own a third of the Pokemon Corporation. I think people went under the assumption that, wow, Nintendo finally gets mobile is a thing and their IP is valuable. They've licensed Pokemon here in mobile. They will continue to license a bunch of their IP in a smart way on mobile. And then Nintendo, which people forget is a 126-year-old company led by very conservative management, said, no, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
And I think the investor said, oh, well, they could have made a lot of money. Even though they will not make a ton of money with Pokemon Go, they could have licensed things in the future to do so and have made it pretty clear that they're not going to do so.
To finish the question, which I think you've now largely answered, it was, do you think people at Nintendo are looking at this and saying, hey, maybe we should get into this, whether they're building mobile games themselves or saying, let's license, I don't know, Zelda to some major player in order that they can make profit from it. But what you're suggesting is, no, that's not going to happen.
So, well, no, it's not that it's not going to happen. Jeremy's right. Nintendo is an astoundingly conservative company. Way back in the late 90s, my wife used to work at Nintendo of America at the same time that I worked across the street at Microsoft, and our buildings faced each other. And this is a total side note, but I was working at Microsoft when they were developing the original Xbox. And so the two companies would put up these big banners facing across the freeway at each other, like mocking fighting each other and whatnot. So it was just a fun time. But Nintendo's always going to be very conservative. They're going to focus on their platforms first and foremost, but they're also in the business of making money. I mean, heck, they used to do trading cards and all sorts of things. And they have in the past licensed their IP to other platforms like the Philips CDI and 3DO and a lot of other platforms, but they've never generally done well. This is one of the first instances where it's performed really, really well all of a sudden. Right. So I'm sure they'll take a look at it, but it's going to be, but there's no, to my understanding, things in place where we're going to see like Mario jumping out of our Android screen anytime soon. So I think that's why investors scaled back just a little bit, because you didn't see a gigantic crazy drop. You saw people tempering their expectations from a stock market point of view, and that's totally reasonable.
I thought it dropped the maximum amount that it legally can drop.
Oh, did it hit the legal limit? I thought it just got close.
I think it hit the circuit breaker. Yeah.
The other thing as well is, did I read somewhere
that's
that
interesting.
What influenced the market change as well was something, some statement from Nintendo about the financial viability of Pokemon Go. Didn't they come out and say, we don't actually think this is going to make a tremendous amount of money?
I've read conflicting things on this, because originally when you got the original spike, people were saying, well, it's hardly surprising, it's making $2 million a day. But then, almost immediately afterwards, I saw a thing before with people from Nintendo saying, we don't see this as being a big money spinner, we're not seeing it.
They said, the quote they gave was that it was not going to make enough money for them to have to re-release their forecast for the next quarter.
Right. Yeah,
it wasn't going to be material to their business, so they didn't need to restate their forecast.
I do not know whether both of those things are true, and the idea that the thing might make $2 million a day and still be irrelevant in terms of your finances, or whether one or both of them is the truth.
Well, it's making a lot of money, but they're only getting a piece, don't forget. I think Apple estimated that they'd make, in the end, about $3 billion from the game, because they get 30%.
Well, $3 billion. Who needs that, eh?
Right, but so that means it's not material to Apple either.
It's going to be interesting. I mean, obviously, we don't have any data on this, but it's going to be interesting. There must be some fascinating conversations going on inside of Nintendo, because, of course, they're building up to the next console. And Microsoft and Sony are already they're refreshing their consoles. So there's a new hardware refresh going on.
Nintendo's about to launch a few more Android and iOS games as well.
Right. So, like, Nintendo have seen, you know, before that launch, Nintendo have seen what's happened with Pokemon Go. There must be a division forming inside of Nintendo where the conservative traditionalists are saying, no, we should focus on our consoles and keep an IP on our hardware. But there must be some other people saying, look at what happened and look what we could do with some of our other IP.
Yeah.
Right.
Nintendo's been that way for the last 40 years.
And they're both going to have something to point to, right? Because it was a hit out of the gate. When it came out at the beginning of July, by July 14th, which was a week after it was released, they had 25 million active players in the U.S.
Right.
And that's already gone down, though. They're already seeing a decline, and it's still July. So I think what you're going to see is the same thing you see, in my opinion. You're going to see the same thing that you saw with Ingress. A bunch of people are going to download it. They realize the game, honestly, if you've played it, is not very good. It's not very well done. The servers are down a lot of the time. So you'll see a lot of people download it, play it a couple times, and stop. A ton of people stop playing it.
Same with Ingress, really.
Exactly. But you'll have a core of people, that like that kind of gameplay, that'll keep playing, and the core of people that really like Pokemon that will keep playing. So the game will last a long time, but will not have any... I think the thing that's mildly disappointing about the success of this game is that I personally think AR is really, really cool. I think the concept of AR is compelling. I think it's going to be a really interesting technology. If this sets the bar for what AR is, I think it's going to be a net loss, because there's no depth sensing. There's no mapping of the real world in a sane way. It's really just your camera and an image opposed on the camera view.
I don't think I agree with that.
Current phones aren't capable of doing true AR yet, but this is a weird...
I think the opposite. I think something like this teaches people that concepts like this exist, the idea that a game intrudes upon the real world, but because it's a really crappy implementation, the next thing that comes out, people are like, oh, it's like Pokemon Go, but better. Yeah. That's excellent. So it's introducing the idea of AR to people, which I think is... valuable for my brand new AR startup.
I think Stuart's right. It's kind of like in the smartphone world. There was lots of smartphones, but none of them really took off. And then the first iPhone came out, which objectively was a big giant turd. It had a billion problems with it, but it was popular enough to turn people onto the concept. And then everyone, including Apple, iterated and made it better and better. So I think Stuart's probably right about that. This could be a good segue into future better AR, but Jeremy is right. It is kind of crappy AR. It's not setting the bar very high if that's the goal.
And it's not.
I honestly never even thought of it as.
Go on.
I was going to say I honestly never even thought of it as AR. Like I just thought of it as location injected game.
More interestingly, I didn't even know it was AR. Right? I was playing away, and people said, "Yeah, well, of course it's AR because you hold up your phone and you see the Pokemon in the real world superimposed." And I said, "No, you don't. The Pokemon I catch appear in a little field." And they said, "Oh, did you deny the game access to your camera?" And I thought, "Well, I don't remember, but that sounds like the sort of thing that I would have done."
Right.
And so I don't see any of the AR stuff anyway, because it probably would have said, "This game wants to use your camera." And I'd have gone, "You have no reason to use my camera. Turn that off. Denied." Right.
So, I mean, do we think, like, building on top of that, like, it seems logical that what's happening right now in 100 different games development studios all over the world are people trying to create the Pokemon Go killer, because the our view of the fact that it's a somewhat average game is not just our view. Like, it seems like most people I've met think it's kind of a bit crappy.
Give it 6 months and we'll see something similar from Digimon, and we'll see a Skylanders version around Christmas time. It's going to go crazy.
I think it's the other thing.
This is like how there were 150 draw something clones when that was the big thing that everyone was playing.
I think the other thing that's interesting, how many people this has gotten to go outside. I guess as someone who runs all the time and likes being outdoors in general, I didn't have a concept for the number of people that were like, I have lived in this neighborhood for years and didn't know this was one block away from me, and they knew because of Pokemon Go. And it's astounding how many people are like, "Yeah, I lost 5 pounds because I walked a mile yesterday."
That is amazing.
I was chatting to someone yesterday who told me that their friend apparently has got a Fitbit, and, you know, you've got to do your 10,000 steps a day, and gets 3,000 at best. And now, since Pokemon Go, has been just crushing over 10,000 every single day, like a marked impact on that person.
I'll tell you what, I mean, I appreciate the fitness angle to it, but the thing which irritates me is I thought, oh, that seems good, you know, go outside. But if you do go outside, you don't actually get to experience any of the outside, because you have spent the whole time looking at your phone with the screen on.
Now, I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, at least people are getting outside. Like, where I live here, I don't drive anywhere. Like, I'll go weeks without getting into my car even. And it's kind of nice going out and seeing literally three times as many people outside as there used to be before. And where I live is like a couple blocks from the Intel headquarters. And so, admittedly, my neighborhood is mostly nerds, which means every other household is outside playing Pokemon. So it is kind of nice to get to see people outside in the fresh air and see people. I hate the game and I hate what it stands for, and I think that we should violently fight against it, but I do like that people are getting outside.
There is one other benefit that this game has brought us that was illustrated when I was in San Francisco last week and I was going out to get some lunch, and there was a guy on his phone staring intently in it, obviously going to catch some Pokemon, and was walking down the road, walking down the path, and then literally walked into a lamppost. And just, it really clocked him as well. It made that cartoon noise. And people who were, this was a busy street, and everyone who was looking on at the situation kind of looked away so the guy didn't feel embarrassed or anything, apart from one guy who yelled out, "Pokemon down!"
I tell you, if there is not already a Tumblr of very short GIFs of people falling over cliffs while chasing a Pokemon, there will be soon. Yeah. And I would subscribe to that. That would be excellent. Brian Lunduke, you just threw into the conversation there.
CIA.
The CIA.
Yes, explain, Brian Lunduke.
Would you guys mind if I walk through the history of this?
I'm sure we made it to 17 minutes and it hasn't.
You mentioned this while we were doing research for the show. So I thought, what's he talking about? And went away and read up about it. But as far as I could tell, the sorts of people who are saying there's some kind of link here with the same sort of people who complain about chemtrails and what have you. So
I'm interested in the
give us a backstory, Brian.
Wait,
what's going on?
What's the thing?
I'm the sort of person that's talking about this, but I also have a chemtrail issue. So let's go ahead.
Oh boy.
So here's what we'll do. Let's separate everything else out. And so I wrote an article for Network World about this. I want to walk you guys through the exact history here with no hyperbole or conspiracy theory around it, because I think this is important for people to know.
Okay.
Good luck.
Nothing else. All right. So we need to go back to the beginning of where this technology and the people involved started, which was 2001 with the founding of a company called Keyhole, which Jeremy brought up already. Keyhole was founded by a guy named John Hankey, who was a foreign affairs officer within the United States government, the exact details of which are somewhat nebulous.
And he was also a Christmas poo as well.
But I'm trying to be nice here and not just go out and just smear people. I'm trying to be cool about this. So the company, Keyhole, it was specifically founded and named because of the spy satellites of the 1950s, the KH satellites that the whole purpose of which really was to spy on people and track people. They were military satellites. The company was named after that. The company was able to found itself with the initial venture backing of a company called InQtel. InQtel is the venture capital firm of the CIA. Now, the money that InQtel put into Keyhole, predominantly, we're not 100% sure exactly how much, because some of the documentation seems a little bit off, but came from the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, which is a fairly innocuous sounding title. But the majority of what the NGA does is working for the United States Department of Defense and providing intelligence to the CIA and the NSA. Tracking of individuals, tracking of troop movements, usually military purposes, right? So that was Keyhole. That's what Keyhole was. It was founded for that. That's where the money came from. Now, Keyhole's public product was Earth, which now is Google Earth, right? So Google acquired Keyhole in 2004 and renamed Earth to Google Earth. Things go quiet for a little bit, and John Hankey stays with inside Google. In 2010, John Hankey founded Niantic Labs as a sub, kind of a startup. So Google has this system where you can create little startups inside the
Google
company.
Labs, yeah.
Exactly. So he created Niantic Labs. Niantic created location-based games and apps. The first was called Field Trip, which was basically guide people around town and see how you can direct people to new stores, new shops, etc. Didn't do terribly well, but it was kind of an interesting foray into that. The second was Ingress, which we've already talked about, a game where you control where people go and you monitor where people go. That did fairly well. Now, in 2015, Niantic was spun off, became its own company, not under Google, and then Pokemon Go was developed and launched by Niantic. Now, that's interesting. It's interesting. It's just information. Here's the thing, though. Even after the recent changes to the security permissions for Pokemon Go, Pokemon Go can still read and write everything on your phone. You give it permission to get full access, read, write, and delete access to your storage. You also give it, assuming you give it permissions, which Stuart did not, because good boy, Stuart, your camera, microphone, etc. Now, the microphone, you can't turn that off. It always has access to your microphone, no matter what, including on both iOS and Android devices, which means, and again, there's no conspiracy here at this point, the game itself, because of the design of the game, the structure of the game, and the permissions you grant it, can, I'm not saying they are, but can discern the following. At any time when the phone is on, at all, including when it's not running, can determine where you are, where you were, what route you took between those locations, when you were at each location, how long it took you to get between them, what you are looking at right now, what you were looking at in the past, what you look like, because if you've got two cameras, it has access to both, including with the ability to do so without you knowing it is, and what files you have on your device, and the entire contents of those files. It's simply by the design of the game. It's how it kind of has to work in a way for a lot of this to happen. I just think that information needs to be out there for people so they know and can make an informed decision.
So it sounds like what you're saying is... So it sounds like what you're saying is it's not that the CIA are using this as a tool to control the people.
There's no evidence of that, as far as I can tell.
It's that the potential attack surface, first of all, is large.
If I were to sit down as the head of the CIA or the NSA or the NGA or something like that, and I thought, what would be the best way to have massive global surveillance of as many people as possible, this would be exactly it. It could not get any better than this. This is the ultimate pinnacle of what you would hope for. Again, I'm not saying the CIA is doing this, but if you were to design it, this is literally... perfect.
Well, I think the perfect, no additional good thing to add to this. Being embedded in Android and iOS would be vastly superior because then you wouldn't have to install it. But just a couple clarifications, if you have microphone access,
Brian, just stop
talking.
So that's the thing, Jeremy. Pokemon Go, at least as of when I installed it to do research for the show, and I've already re-uninstalled it, doesn't have access to your microphone at all. So if you go to play right now, it does not have access to your microphone. It's not a listed permission.
You do not need to specifically deny or give permission on either Android or iOS to gain access to the microphone. It is not a necessity. There are certain components that, based on the system, you do need to grant access to or deny access to. The microphone is not one of them.
So any app can always use the microphone?
It is easy to work around that. Astoundingly easy. And even in newer versions
of Android where you can individually deny permissions per app?
Yes.
I'd need to look at it. There certainly used to be an Android microphone permission, an explicit one.
You guys need to watch more interviews with Edward Snowden.
but it may have, that permission may have been removed in favor of letting apps do it or whatever.
Literally, the only way to deny this is to open up your phone and disconnect your internal microphone. That is the only way.
Okay. So, we're about out of time, but this to me seems like a good segue to our community, because I think... it would be helpful to, first of all, I think it would be cool to learn, like, what do people think about this? Have you tried Pokemon Go? Do you like it? Do you think it's interesting? But also, what do you think about what Brian's talking about? Not only just the permissions, like, could this kind of abuse be performed? Do you believe that there is a risk there? Do you believe there's not a risk there? Do you believe this is just a leaky app that's requiring a ton of permissions and everything?
Before we go, we should say that there is a huge amount of data out there that security exploits like this have been used in massive bulk by the CIA and the NSA over the span of many, many years, including webcams on laptops and everything else. So there is literally, as far as I can tell, zero reason to believe it's not.
Well, I was going to say, we should use this as a public service announcement on behalf of all of Bed Voltage that you should always pay attention to the permission. Please be more cognizant of the permissions you grant.
Yes, always.
Your privacy in general. This game aside, it's a good idea in general. Please do that.
Never buy a nanny webcam that connects to a proprietary service is what we're saying. Like some people on this show are wont to do.
So it's been commented on in the past in this show and previous shows that I am often behind the times on things.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct.
Along those lines, I just discovered Spotify.
do they do wax cylinders? I didn't realize they did.
Shut up. All right. So I'm a big music fan. I listen to music. Anytime that I can listen to music, I'm listening to music, right? And when I'm working, when I'm traveling, whatever else. I like to buy music. I don't rip it off the internet. And there has been times when there's just albums that, you know, are too expensive to buy or I can't get access to them or whatever else. I'd heard about Spotify being an interesting service where basically everything's up there. And I thought to myself, I'm sure everything's up there apart from the obscure death metal that I listen to. Everything's up there.
How does death metal sound on your Victrola? Which has to be a pain to carry around when you listen to your music mobily.
You know, we're doing a great job of skewering John O'Bacon, something I am always a big fan of. The problem is, when this comes back around to me, I'm going to be starting to talk about my vinyl record collection that comes out of my tin horn that I use when I convert it to MP3s. So I'm going to let John O continue right now and refrain.
So I'm
going to
finish up, but basically, I think Spotify is incredible. I love the model that they've got there. Clearly, artists are liking it to a degree because they're putting their catalogs up there, and a lot of really obscure bands are putting their material up there. But I'm conscious of the fact that it's not the only music service. So what do we think is the best service for people who want to listen to a wide swathe of music? Is Spotify the only option? Because I've used Amazon Music, but I primarily use that to buy albums and to make sure they're on multiple devices and I can download the MP3s. Spotify, from what I can tell, heavily DRMs.
I'm not sure that artists are liking streaming music, to be honest with you, though.
No,
I think labels are. And
labels
artists don't
like
really
it.
Get to decide where their music is, which is a sad. We don't have
that's
time
fair.
To go into
yeah.
this in this segment, obviously, but I think it's labels, not artists, just to clarify.
Yeah, that. No, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah.
Agreed. Ring up Taylor Swift and ask her whether she thinks Spotify is a good idea.
Luckily, she's not on there. She's one of the few people that's not on there.
She pulls her music.
She's on Apple only.
Yeah. Right. Which is a shame. I mean, that nearly pushed me off Spotify. So what have you guys used? Have you used Google Music or some other things?
I used to use Google Play Music up to about a year ago when I kind of swore off all of these sorts of services entirely for obvious reasons. But actually, so I've used a lot of them, and probably Google Play Music was my favorite in terms of the combination between ease of use and the audio collection. The one thing I thought, and I don't encourage people to go use these services because I think they're a terrible idea, but the one thing I liked about Google Play Music was it not only did it have a good collection and the audio quality was quite nice, and that's a big deal for me, but if you have like an Android device, you can you know, tap a couple of buttons and all the songs that you want to have locally stored are all made sure they're stored locally on your device when you're on the go. So even when you don't have an internet connection, you've got them all for a prolonged period of time. And I thought that was a very nice feature, and they implemented it well. So if you are into music on the go and don't always have a connection, I think Google Play Music was probably the nicest experience in that regard. So it kind of won out for me.
But again, I
swore them off when I basically kind of just decided I couldn't support these sorts of services anymore.
Honestly, even if you do have a good connection, if you want to listen to a song five times, there is no reason why you should download it five times.
With Google Play Music, if you listen to it five times, even if you don't have it stored locally, it caches it anyway. So you
it will cache it automatically. Yeah. And that's
pretty
a good
smart.
Thing.
So I think out of all of them, Google Play seems the best implemented one to me. That's the one I currently use. It's the thing that's been a little bit frustrating, right? It's Spotify has about just over 30 million songs. They say Apple has just under 30 million songs. Tidal says they have 40 million songs. Google claims to have about 35 million songs, but they're not the same songs. So I've found I don't tend to listen to pop music. So like Tidal's kind of taken this to the extreme that, you know, Jay-Z, I know, Beyonce, I think, who else was it? Kanye and somebody else, Rihanna. You could only stream it via Tidal for the first month or something that it was out, which in my case, I don't care about because I don't listen to any of those people. But I think it's frustrating now that if you are into pop music, especially if you don't subscribe to basically all of them, you're going to be missing out on something. So while I think that's working out well for the labels and maybe the artists, it's really not working out well for the fans. And I don't know how long the music industry can continue to just ignore their fans.
That's a good point. I should just add this in. On the Google Play Music side, what I did notice was they had the largest collection of kind of the nerd music, like the current nerdy bands, like the nerdcore rap folks and like the people, Jonathan Coulton-esh, No More Kings.
Their chat pop game is strong.
Yeah, their chat pop game is strong. That's really what I guess it comes down to. That was a good place to go for the, you know, the small two man groups, the, you know, the one ups and whatnot. They tend to have a better collection on Google Play. And my thinking is that's because it's within Google and Google's a bit nerdier, and so the people within Google reach out to those bands more or something. That's my theory behind it.
So to be clear here, we're talking about streaming services where you pay a monthly fee and get access access to their whole catalog. We're just not
music in general. Like, what's the best way to get music into your eardrums?
A good proportion of these services also provide some kind of cloud storage of your own MP3s, which you can then pull down to a device if you want to. That's, for example, what my daughter uses Google Play Music for. Because she hasn't got enough space on her phone for all of her MP3s. So she keeps them all in Google Play and then just downloads the ones that she wants when she wants them. And I sync them up there with Google Music Manager. So that's quite convenient for her.
The download thing for me was a requirement.
If she just pulls a song out of her head and wants to listen to it, she wouldn't dream of paying a subscription fee to Tidal or to Spotify or whatever. She just does it on YouTube. And as far as I can tell, so do all of her friends. And so do I. If I just want to listen to a song randomly, I'll just punch it into YouTube and press a button.
Interesting. And I guess they do that sometimes too.
Which is free for now, but with YouTube Red, which they integrated into Google Play Music now, how long will you be able to do that? Right.
Well, interestingly, if YouTube say, well, okay, uploaded music videos, we're only going to have the official Vivo ones or whatever, we're going to kill all the remixes, and we're going to move all those official music videos to YouTube Red and whatever, they will see their user numbers drop enormously.
No, I don't think it's that's going to happen, but we're going to have more advertisements on the people who aren't YouTube Red. So they're going to be increasing the amount of ads to the point where it annoys people either into using a different service or into subscribing to YouTube Red.
That's the same as Spotify, though. I mean, so the holiday we were on last week, and we put together a playlist for it, and we did that with Spotify because it's easy to create a shared playlist between all of us, and you can just pick songs off of their list, right? So I was sitting there listening to this playlist, and about every fourth song, it would play an advert, which I can live with, apart from the fact that every time I played an advert, it was the same advert. It's like, I didn't buy it the first time. Stop advertising this thing to me every 15 minutes for the rest of my life. It's incredibly irritating.
This is one of the reasons, I don't know if, well, it suggests that Acker's not like this, but as I'm getting older, I feel increasingly more responsible about paying
for stuff rather than stealing it.
So for example, Mr. Robot season 2 came on TV, and I know I could go and watch it online somewhere on some dodgy website in Russia, but I bought it on Amazon because it's rigged up to our TV with a Roku. So as long as it's convenient, I mean, obviously I'm in a position financially where I can go and buy music. People who are on the breadline are not going to have the money to do that. But like, you know, you can go and get it on YouTube, but for all we all complain about how there isn't any money in music, it's because we keep ripping musicians of music.
And here's the thing with all these sorts of things. Once the service goes away, you guys are all screwed. Both the videos that you purchased for the TV shows you want to watch, all the music and everything. The services are going to give you guys the biggest middle finger, and you just lost a couple hundred to a couple thousand bucks.
You know what? It's such a low risk.
It's a low risk because those services are going to go away. They are.
No.
Okay, look back 20 years. What music and video service back then still exists today? I can point to multiple. In fact, if you were a Comcast customer 5 years ago and you purchased movies and whatnot onto your set-top boxes, you don't necessarily even have that access to that content anymore because their platform has changed and their model has changed.
I agree with you that there is a risk for me.
No, there's not a risk.
I think part of it is understanding that the new model is you're leasing things, you're not buying them. And if you go that you don't own anything.
That's my understanding. If that service goes away, honestly, if I end up losing, if that happens, which I think is unlikely, and that does happen, and I end up losing, the fact that I can't watch Paw Patrol with Jack anymore, so be it.
Let's move away from Paw Patrol.
Very briefly, interestingly, Niamh, who I mentioned, you know, just listens to stuff on YouTube, doesn't think about it, has recently got into vinyl. And yes, I think I think a small part of that is the sense of permanence of actually owning a thing.
Yes.
Right? 95% of it is because she gets to be a hipster and have a record thing.
No, it's because she's becoming a hipster. It's nothing to do with permanence. She could buy a CD. It's nothing to do with permanence. Anyone who uses vinyl is a fucking hipster.
Okay. All right. So
that's not fair. Old metal people who still listen to Iron Maiden, they're not hipsters.
I like vinyl. I am most certainly not a hipster.
I jumped. I jumped too quick. All right.
So here's the thing. So I moved away from all the streaming services. When I purchase music, it is, if it's available, I get it on vinyl, and I listen to it on vinyl. Now, then again, most of the music, I don't listen to, you know, Taylor Swift and whatnot. I listen to a lot of Frank Sinatra. I listen to classic rock from like the 70s and early 80s. And then I listen to some of the nerdier stuff from nowadays. But so for me, it's a little bit easier than a lot of people, but yeah. That's where I buy it. And then I rip it onto really high quality MP3s, usually MP3s, because I would do AUGs, but it plays in more places, so I usually just do it to MP3s. Sure. And then I put them all up on a Nextcloud server that I control, so I have my own server. So I have my own digital archive that I control, have backed up to multiple locations, no one can take away from me, and I've got the permanent backup in forms of the vinyl and a couple of CDs for the ones where I can't. I have full control over it, and in the long run, compared to the amount of music I listen to, I actually don't spend all that much more money. I probably spend a tiny bit more money than if I had a subscription. I probably do. But realistically, not that much more. And let me ask you this, Jonathan Massive Awesomeness Bacon. What is your favorite all-time underrated hardcore metal band? What's your favorite? The one that people don't know about but is amazing.
Overkill.
Damn. I was going to have a pound of arch enemy.
All right. How about this? All right. So Overkill. You buy Overkill on Google Play, Amazon Music, whatever. Fuck. Doesn't matter. Right. You buy it on that. 5 years from now, you want to go listen to Overkill and it's not available on the newer services because no one listens to Overkill. So they don't get it back on those services. You've lost your only copy of Overkill. The entire world just said, fuck you, Jonathan Bacon. No, you can never listen to Overkill.
No.
Why not?
I'll go and get it from a YouTube. If I can't get it legally, I'll go and get it illegally. I'll go and get it from YouTube. I'll go and download it off a website. And so I agree with you, but for all you can go and buy the vinyl because you listen to a relatively small number of bands and albums, whatever else, and you can rip it into MP3s.
No, I don't listen to a small number. I listen to a lot. I just listen to a narrow group.
I listen to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different bands.
So do I. For me, it totally works.
For me, $10. Just the music I listened to yesterday would cost me $200 in buying it.
Right.
So, like, you know,
now, do you just listen to those once, or do you listen to them over and over again over the course of years?
No, I will listen, I jump around
a lot.
Well,
I think the benefit to streaming, too, that you're maybe underrating here a little bit is if you want to hear a song right now, you can just go type it in. It's almost definitely there.
Well, that's true. That is nice, isn't it?
And don't forget, I only am super familiar with Google Play, so if you... Google Play has two services. The non-streaming one, if you buy the song, it's a completely DRM-free song. So that's true.
I really like that.
Yeah.
Now that does suck about Spotify. Yeah. It's one of the
Amazon
reasons why
and
I use
Google
Amazon.
Play, no DRM in that no regard, DRM, and like I really that. Approve so, of that. Yes. And just to point out, just to be clear, my solution: I still get the song whenever I want it, wherever I am, even if it's not on my device, from my own cloud or Nextcloud server. So I still have all the benefits. I just always own my own music, and I'm not leasing anything.
So did we all make tons of money by shorting Nintendo then?
Yeah, no, we totally did. I'm totally rich now. I don't even have to do this stuff anymore.
Nice.
Independently wealthy.
Yeah.
As opposed to being independently full of bollocks.
Yeah. One of those things will happen forever for me and the other never will. I'll let people decide which.
I'm surprised you're not still basking in that sweet, sweet gopher money you made back in the day.
Man, if there was a way to like invest into gopher stocks, I totally would have. I absolutely would have.
You got a point at them and say, okay, you know, you had the .com, boom, it made loads of millionaires, and pets.com, whatever. The one technology which went through it completely unscathed and without any money was gopher.
What do you guys think was the biggest in all of technology from years ago? Like, let's say at least 10 years ago, right? What do you think was the biggest shame that it didn't take off?
Oh, using that.
I know I'm asking you this on the top of your head.
The Spruce Goose.
The Spruce
Goose. Didn't take off at all.
That totally took off.
Once? Literally. One time.
No. Yeah, well, once.
This is why words have meanings.
That worked. Yeah, yes. No, that worked. You know which one I was bummed out about? And this wasn't from all that long ago. It was the 90s, but was BOS. I thought that was a pretty rad operating system.
Could have been cool.
BOS was cool.
It could have been very cool.
And it was just rad, and it just you know, for multiple reasons, never went anywhere. It would have been awesome. I mean, I know there's an open source version of it now, which is still pretty rad, but it's kind of doesn't really have the support of anything, and that makes it sad.
Yeah.
Yep.
I would like to have seen B, if only because then I'd have a machine now with a little speedometer on the front of it.
You know what I loved? What I loved about BIOS, it was all their error messages in the system were haikus. And I just thought that was the classiest and funniest thing. Like their web browser and the system, there was just haikus everywhere. You can even find a list of old BOS haikus online, and some of them are just brilliant. Like they're unable to connect a web page thing was a little haiku, and it was just fantastic.
Yeah, it's weird it didn't take off, isn't it? Do you remember the Sharp Zorus? I know you.
I've got one in a box right now.
I thought that was a shame that didn't take off, because that was, to me, when that first popped up, was just, I got the developer edition shortly before it came out, because at the time you could pay a certain amount of money and get like you got a discount on it. And I just thought that was wicked cool.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was so, and if that had taken off back then, because, you know, everyone was kludging Linux onto their iPacs
at the time. Yeah.
But the Zorus was like that sweet, integrated keyboard.
And then the Nokia devices were just as good, and then also just didn't take off either.
Yeah, I've got my N810, my old Nokia N810 internet tablet. Yeah. I still use it. I literally have it in my bag right now, fully charged. Yeah. I bring it with me almost everywhere. It's my main. I use it for listening to most of my music. I use it for email. Yep. Yeah, well, is that the 800 or the 710?
This is the 800.
Yeah, the 800. Yeah, I've got my 810 because I love the little thumb keyboard on it. But they're all three of them were fantastic.
Yeah,
yeah.
But they're just proto smartphones. If you look at them,
no, they're pocket computers. They were like, do you guys remember that those old Hewlett Packard made those itty bitty palm top running like DOS 3.0 that ran off of like two AA batteries? Those things were amazing, man. They had like massive battery life off two AA's. You stick them in your pocket, you've got a full computer in your pocket, man. It was amazing. Yeah. It's not a smartphone. It's not connected to anything unless you want it to be. It was just this cool on the go computer. It was so cool.
I've got a cool on-the-go full computer in my pocket now.
Yeah, but this was, you know, 10 plus years
ago. Bear in mind, though, Ag, that back then, bear in mind, particularly in England, back then, data on a portable device wasn't a thing. I mean, back in those early days, data on your computer wasn't much of a thing
You're talking to one of the people who used to pay ruinously high amounts of money to get 9600 baud GSM downloads to a phone and go, look, I can download stuff on the internet. I can browse the web while I'm standing in the street. How cool is that, right?
It was cool.
Not very cool with my WAP browser, but nonetheless.
Going back in time, very briefly, I'll be surprised if Brian and Jeremy have heard of this, but Ag, do you remember years ago there was the campaign for unmetered telecommunications in the UK? Did you join that?
I did. Unbundling the local loop.
Right. And it was, so for you guys, like, it was 10p a minute to basically get online. Yeah. And what was weird is there was a appliance store in England called, I forget what it was called, and they basically came out with unlimited internet access for a flat fee. They were the first. They were kind of like a.
This is still dial-up. This is pre-broadband stuff.
Of England.
But it was like some kind of like random appliance shop that came up with this, and they spearheaded in like the campaign for unlimited telecommunications was trying to campaign to have like it was in the US. I'm glad it changed because it would have screwed the UK if we had continued having to pay. So.
Man.
The kids don't know
my first at-home internet connection, was 2400 baud connecting to a Wildcat BBS that allowed me 1 hour a day where I could drop out of it and load up a slip server to actually get internet connection. So I could do 1 hour a day of 2400 BBS, and I thought I was just the hottest shit on the planet.
There you go. There's the technology that should have kept going. FIDO now, which is how I got it. How I used to get email on arcade BBS.
I used to run a BBS in the Seattle area that was a FIDO net node at the time.
Yay!
It was fantastic.
I do miss the screech of that modem, I will say. It's just not the same being able to sit down.
All right. I don't mean to make our outro run for 27 minutes, but so I ran that BBS, right? And as a high school kid out of my bedroom, the system was up and running, and I had an external US robotics modem. You know, those beautiful ones with kind of the little purple stripe on the front and all the nice little lights. It had a volume knob on the side of it, so I could adjust how loud that screech was. I kept the volume on, but turned it down so it was real quiet. I stretched the cable over, and I put it on my nightstand, so as I was sleeping at night, I could hear those beautiful, soothing noises as people logged on to my BBS and connected into it. And I could go, I feel like people are connecting and playing my Trade Wars instance. And it was just the most amazing thing for me. It became like, you know, when people who live next to train tracks or the ocean and they get used to that sound all the time and now they can't sleep without it. Literally, when I shut down the BBS, I couldn't sleep for like a week because I didn't have that little noise in the background. It was rough for me, man.
I miss those days of that thrill of connecting to somebody else digitally.
Yeah.
Like the Bean network. Like I remember setting mGetty up on my first Linux machine and being able to like dial into my machine from somewhere else like was just such a incredible like thrill.
Bear in mind, we were in England, right? Not the United States of America. So we were still banging two rocks together at 2,280 hertz and all these connected things.
All right, we should wrap this up.
This is such a nostalgic show. I feel like alt bad voltage is going to have to be added to Usenet or something.
Dude, if someone doesn't create that, I'm going to be pissed.
We need that.
They should make alt.bin.badvoltage. They should make it a binary group so it's all bad voltage.
Binaries. That's what we need.
We will finally be the people to undo the eternal September.
I'm just saying that one member of the team has got experience of running a BBS. Maybe a bad voltage BBS will have to appear at some point. Yeah. Anyway, we should wrap this up. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.